Welcome to Trax Cultures. I'm Mike Piccinato, your host. This podcast unravels the intricacies of transitions across cultures. For those feeling the pull of change or supporting loved ones through it, this podcast is for you. We understand the uncertainty and excitement that come with such transitions, and together we'll explore how to adapt while maintaining community and belonging. Throughout our episodes, we'll draw on insights from the Cross-Cultural Transition Handbook by Dr. Stephen W. Jones. Whether you're moving to a new place or supporting someone who is, this podcast offers encouragement and connection. Enjoy the conversations as we navigate the challenges and joys of cross-cultural transitions together. Well, welcome back. It's great to have Joel and Kate Damon with us again, and also to be joined by Stephen Jones.
Hello.
In our last episode, we started this two-part series on what is culture. And what we want to talk about now is concepts 4 and 5 in Stephen's book, The Cross-Cultural Transition Handbook. And we're going to really jump into the idea of moving between cultures is deeply disorienting. And the disorientation caused by crossing cultural barriers can be anticipated and reduced, but not eliminated. Stephen, can you introduce this idea of moving between cultures being disorienting?
Yeah, this one is one that I get interesting pushback on sometimes, because I think when people visit across cultures short term, a lot of times, like the first stage of culture shock, which I know we're not really talking about, but the first stage of culture shock is often the honeymoon stage, right? Where everything is sort of, I don't know, like Disney-fied. And you have this kind of amazing experience of this other place. And it's like, this isn't disorienting at all. I am more fully me, you know, this week than I've ever been before, that kind of a feeling. And so then when I'm here, you know, doom and gloom, like, it's deeply disorienting, people are like, no, it's not. It's great. And the reality is that I am also right, that it is often deeply disorienting. But the disorientation for moving across cultures often trickles in. It comes very slowly. And so there's like all of these micro disorientations. Sometimes there are big disorientations, right? Sometimes it's like, okay, the language, I don't know the language, that's disorienting. But then there are all these really small disorientations that accumulate, they add up. And the overall effect of them is that it leaves a person feeling really like, I thought I knew how the world worked. I thought I knew who I was and where I fit in the world. And now I'm not sure about anything. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is deeply disorienting. I think the tricky piece is, because it kind of trickles in, it doesn't immediately make sense that that's happened. And so a lot of times when people are experiencing that, it feels like something else is the problem. Like, it feels like my teammates are the problem, or it feels like this move was a mistake, or it feels like there's all these other things that get blamed for it. But a lot of times it's just that over and over and over again in small ways, I thought I knew how things worked and then I didn't. That can be down to something as basic as I thought I knew how to cross the street and I don't. I don't know how to cross the street here. Is it only when the light is green? But then I see some people crossing when it's red. But then I also got yelled at when I crossed when it was red. And can I cross where there isn't a crosswalk? And then, like, what about the things that look like crosswalks but aren't? And how do you know the difference? Right. So it's just crossing the street. You've been doing it your whole life, but like now you don't know how to do it. And there are 1,000 things like that. That's where there's this over and over again disorientation. And the cumulative effect of that is actually a very deep disorientation.
Do you think, like, when we go to new places, that ease of that sort of honeymoon thing, like Kate and I, we love to take road trips. We love going to just new towns and cities. And that happens every time you get there and you're like, oh, this, everything here is amazing. I could live here. And is it because when we get to things, we seek out things we understand, probably, right? Like, we fit it into our own box and have that experience first. And then the realness of the environment that we're in creeps in. I remember being in Berlin and having a craving for a snack or something. And we went to the, not Lidl, I can't remember the other place we went to. And just trying to identify what cookie was what was so frustrating, because you're just not getting the thing you want. I'm a 42-year-old guy, you know, like I should be able to figure this out. And it's not this thing you thought you understood at first. And it's, yeah.
Do you guys like pickles?
Makes you feel...
Yeah, we love pickles.
Okay. Yeah.
Pickles are one of these areas for me. Like, I will stand and look, and there's at some stores there are so many different kinds of pickles, and occasionally mm-hmm. I would say about, I think I'm batting about 90. Not percent.
I can't do sweet pickles. Like, I won't. If you put sweet pickles on something, that's not a flavor I want. And so, yeah, that would be deeply disappointing experience, because it's really hard to tell from looking at it. You can't read what that label says.
We got pickles recently and wanted to make an egg salad with them. And I was like, okay, I'm just adding salt to the pickles. I added salt. If I'd had vinegar with me, we were on a road trip. If I'd had vinegar, I would have done that too. Like, it just, anyway.
Yeah. Funny.
Yeah. That's it. I think, Joel, like, to your point, when we go places, we essentially bring our understanding of the world with us and impose it on that place. And I remember there's a phrase that stuck with me from my intercultural training where people are talking about the risk of going somewhere. I think the example they used was Americans who lived in Japan who never actually got to know the culture. And so they just continued having an American experience in Japan. So they just imposed that on the other place. And if you do that, and I think some people are successful at doing that. We've known people who've lived in Berlin for 10 years and never learned German. Like, that is a Berlin experience, right? There is a Berlin experience where you come here and you only speak English, but it means you're never really actually getting to know Berlin as Berlin is. I don't know. I mean, there's so many different versions of Berlin, but anyway.
There's a thoroughness that is being missed. Yeah, you could go and you will be fine and you can navigate those waters, but you're not actually, like I said, a thoroughness to that experience of the culture that would be lacking, I think.
Some people are amazing travelers. Some people are really, really good travelers, but they're not really great at living cross-culturally, right? And there's a difference. This I can travel places and I figure out how it works and I can enjoy it and everything's amazing. But to say, what do I really love about this culture and how do I begin to live here really well is different.
Growing up, my childhood best friend, her mom, like, she was born in Puerto Rico, and she always told us, don't go to another city expecting it to be like you're used to, and get to know the cultural norms and don't act like it's gross or weird. And I was just remembering this, like, this conversation I had with Beth Geary. She told us in Puerto Rico, it's normal for people to talk close and they'll sit right next to you on the bus stop, even though there's plenty of other room. And that's totally normal. When we had started driving, she said, don't assume you can run through a yellow light in every city. And she would gave us tips on, okay, when you're in a different city, go with what the culture is in the other city. And I started thinking about all that. I was like, oh yeah, she gave us a ton of information of when you go to another culture, do not expect it to be like you're used to. I've thought about that since I was 14 years old, and here we are.
Can you guys think of other times where you've experienced disorientation when you've visited people or when you've visited places and seen how things have been done differently?
Remember that wedding we went to in Minnesota, and there was a hay rack ride and everything, and we were surprised by it all?
Yeah, it was very, very normal for them.
Well, they were talking a lot about we were on this hay rack ride and they saw there was a deer in a field and all the guys were salivating of how they could shoot this deer. And we're
they're talking about how it was just fascinating.
Yeah.
Was the thing that struck you as odd that it was at a wedding or what was the disconnect?
It was expected. It was normal to get in a wagon behind somebody's dad's truck and everybody's pounding beers. Apparently the normal thing to do the night before the wedding.
Yeah, it was wild. Mm-hmm. We had a great time, but it was just surprising. My instinct when I see a wild animal is not, oh, I wish I could kill that thing. But it was a normal interaction with the people that we were with, because they're all hunters and they're all farmers. And it was just I wouldn't do that. And I was super judgy.
Pastored for 16 years in Minnesota, 10 years as a lead pastor, did my share of weddings, and we never did a hay rack ride the night before the wedding.
Oh, you're missing out.
Really?
Well, what I'm saying is I think this is also a classic case of, oh yeah, that's what they do there. You know, you'll have an experience somewhere and be like, oh, those Minnesotans are weird. You know, we see people all the time while we're on home assignment in churches whose family come from Germany, and they'll be like, hey, yeah, don't they do this in Germany? I'm like, not in Berlin, but I'm sure they do it where your family's from. it's fascinating how quickly we form those ideas of this is how it works.
It were, or maybe even yeah. Something very, very small, like something that happens in one part of a community, and then we assign it as the identity of or something that everybody in a much broader vicinity does as well as part of the culture.
Yeah, I was on my local news source TikTok, and it was talking about the culture in Germany, and it was like beautiful cobblestone streets, and it was like, actually, this is the culture, and it was like it was a club, it was like a dance club, and I was like, okay, yeah, that's funny that we're talking about this now. The culture is also arts and beautiful European streets, but then it's also this club culture that was packed to the gills, and you can't just say that Germany is this culture when there's so many other subcultures. Joel and I come from the corporate world, and we've done all the corporate personality tests. And on the Emergenetics, my social is like half of the pie chart. And I had to understand that what it means is I look to make sure that other people are comfortable and other people are fitting in. And I want to make sure that everyone else around me is happy and comfortable. And so I feel like that will actually be a plus for me, where I'm watching to see what everybody else is doing when I'm there before I cross the street. Or like, if I were to drive a car in Berlin, which I won't probably do, like, what are the rules when there's a lights and things like that? Like, I would make sure I knew all those things before I did something, so I wouldn't look a fool and wouldn't embarrass or irritate people.
I think that's the desire for everyone. That helps us move really naturally into that next concept, is that sometimes the desire is to say, I just want to eliminate all of the disorientation. I just want to get rid of it. I want to do whatever I can to make sure that I don't experience it, that I just slot in supernaturally into the culture. And so even sometimes with short-term teams that are coming, we'll get tons of questions like, well, what should I wear? And what should we bring? And sometimes those are good questions. And other times it's just this misconception that people are thinking they're going to be able to eliminate all of the disruption. Steven, why is it impossible to eliminate it? And how can people anticipate it and reduce disorientation?
I think maybe this is another area where, because we often think that culture is much simpler than it is, and because we really, really tend to underperceive how much of our own experience of the world is actually cultural already. So like Joel and Kate, you coming from Nebraska, like you have a very cultural Nebraskan experience, right? But it's more cultural than probably you know it is. And I think that this is one of those things that, like, to the extent that we think our experience of the world is normal, it becomes really, really difficult to then understand just how weird we are as we come into the new space. Mm-hmm. And it also means that we didn't even think to ask the question about how weird they are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. Well, because of the way we've been phrasing this, right? It's the way culture is the way we do life, right? The way we navigate our life together. And that definition means that there's others, right? That there's other people that do something else a different way. If this is the way that we are doing something, that means that there's other ways that it's handled. And so it just implies that if you think about it the right way, it just means that everybody does things a little bit differently, and the way you do it isn't necessarily right or wrong.
But part of what's so hard about that is that, like, our ideas of right and wrong we find within that space.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's wrong to not have pickles that taste like pickles. Right.
Amen. Yeah.
I think one of the ways that I noticed this in not anticipating it was how different sometimes motivations can be and culture can be within church settings. Because I pastored in established churches, evangelical established churches. And often, for example, one of the things that we were trying to do was try to figure out, how do we get people in our church spaces to appreciate some of the liturgical elements? Or how do we introduce things like the Apostles' Creed into our church? And often that meant for us doing it in some kind of dynamic video package, or some kind of somebody reading the creed in a dramatic voice with with music behind it and video effects. And so when I came into our church in Berlin, there was also this desire to do things like the Apostles' Creed. So I took the time to find a video and did all the translation, laid undertitles under it, and showed it to our worship team. And they were like, Mike, we don't want anything to do with this dynamic, high energy Apostles' Creed. Can't we just read it? Of course we can. I mean, that's super simple.
Not this week, because I put a lot of work into this.
No, it just died. It just died. I was like, oh, man. It was a good language exercise for me. But it was still just one of those things where we come in with this understanding and don't even realize maybe how disruptive it's going to be when we bump up into a completely different cultural understanding of how things work.
Mm-hmm. Mike, one time you sent me something recently. It was like, Berliners aren't being rude when they give criticism or feedback, because they're like, that's helpful. They want to help you improve. And to me, that is so incredibly rude. Like, if I put work into something, who do you think you are telling me that I did it wrong? And that's going to be really hard for me.
We had a lovely, lovely man. The first time he showed up at one of our things in our gallery, just a fantastic guy, and showed up and he's like, Mike, like, you really undersell how much you do in the community. And this is beautiful. It's so nice that you're supporting this. But, you know, on your flyer, and then he pulls out the flyer and points out all the things that we could have done better on it. And I'm just, I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you. That helps us do things in the future. But if you don't have a feedback runde at the end of an event and you're hosting it with Germans, or if you don't give them space to say, hey, this is how I think you could improve, they're like, well, I mean, how are you going to ever do it better if you don't give us a chance to tell you how you could improve? And when we do that with groups at the end of all of our short-term teams, we sit down over a dinner, and man, the Midwest groups really, really struggle when I sit them and say, hey, what worked well this week?
I mean, you know, unless we really ticked them off.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But yeah. And that's happened. But a lot of times when it's like, hey, how can we improve? It's just like, oh, I mean, everything was great. And I know that's not true. I know we push their buttons, but they just really struggle to tell us how.
Yeah. This is, if you have tips or suggestions on how to prepare for that, because that is going to be so hard for me. Like, I lead our weekly Bible study. And Joel and his friends are disruptors, and I will tell them to get out if they question anything I put together. And so I don't know what to do.
I think there's a really interesting cultural difference as well at play. Our starting place is so different. I think a lot of times in the U.S., we have a mythologized meritocracy where you succeed because you're smart and you worked hard and you have good moral character. And that's not really anywhere near as true as we pretend like it is. But it means that, like, we often feel like we have to earn our place in the States, like, and almost like we have to earn our worth. I think that's fair, that our worth is kind of always a little bit up for grabs, and like, it's contested. And so I put together this Bible study, right? Like you're saying, and I did this work, and now my worth is in some way tied to that, because that's the way we largely function in American society.
Yes.
And in German society, like, that's not where your worth starts. Like, your worth starts, in fact, is written into the Grundgesetz, which is like sort of like the constitution. And like, the very first thing is, the dignity, the worth of the human shouldn't be called into question. Yep. So just at the fundamental level, our starting place is, you have worth. So like, to critique you from the place of assuming that you know that you have worth, and assuming that you know that I know that you have worth, comes across really different than critiquing you from a place of being like, yeah, your worth is kind of up for debate. Right. And so like, it just comes across so differently. And we feel it, like, parent nights at school are just so wildly different than anything similar in the States. And one of the biggest differences is, the teacher will stand up front, and after, you know, 20 minutes or whatever of going through whatever program they prepared, then the criticism will start. And I mean, I can very much imagine that if the same kind of criticism happened in any of the K-12 spaces I was in the States, that the teachers would very often leave the room crying.
For sure.
And here, it's just like, it's the teacher parents, is like,
it's to clarify, yes. It's the parents criticizing the teachers. It's
all of the parents.
Yes.
Criticizing the teacher at once, or criticizing the school through the teacher.
Wow.
Or parents that will set up WhatsApp chat groups to assemble their criticisms so and that then, they can be brought to the teacher.
And the teachers are just like, fine, because this isn't really about them. And they're like, sometimes they're like, well, yeah, we should look into that. Or, yeah, no, here's where you can direct that criticism. Or, well, here's what we tried and here's why it didn't work. When you watch reality shows, like where there's contestants, like they'll ask them, or sporting events,
sports.
Like the interviewer afterwards will be like, yeah, you missed that goal. That was really terrible. And the person will be like, yeah, I should have hit that goal and I didn't.
it's rough.
It's so like, different.
I've seen these sporting events where it'll be like, man, you played terribly today. And the guy will be like, well, yeah, I just couldn't seem to find my rhythm.
We were watching the Olympics and there was this lady who it was her last time doing the sport. I can't remember what the sport was. It was her last time. Like, she's done with the sport. She did not place where she wanted. She's literally crying. Right. Sitting down with the people and then they're just going after her. Well, you know, it seems like you didn't do this very well. No, I didn't do that very well. You know, but like she wasn't crying because of the criticism. She was crying because she was sad because her sport's over. Right? It was just like the criticism was just part of the game. It's super interesting.
Fascinating.
But they're pointing that out. They're trying to. It's coming from a constructive place. Right. It's just.
I mean, not always.
No.
I don't think it always is coming from a constructive place. I think also some like people like to complain. That's also a thing.
Sure. Yeah.
But like it's never about your worth. Like that would be so weird for it to be about your worth here. Is that fair, Mike?
I think so. I think, I mean, there's different places you would see that. Like if it's in a school setting, you know, sometimes it's just grumpy parents, but sometimes it's really because they have this idea, my kids are not going to get an education. And so they're very open about pointing it out. Or,
and they may be like, yeah, you need to go as the teacher, but that's not saying you're worthless.
Right. It's not working for our students.
This is fascinating. Joel and I were experienced because we've just in our entire working experience has been in the corporate world. And the second language acquisition class is like, I'm struggling. And we're talking to Carrie at the home office. And I was like, I feel like I'm going to be the reason that we're not going to be able to go to Berlin. And she's like, you're already chosen. You're already going. Like, she's like, this is just to help you. And so much of what I do is tied up in my worth. And if I fail, I am going to be like, taken away from this. And this is like my entire life of like, I perform, I receive good things. If I don't do well, good things are taken away from me. And trying to break that, because that is not truth. And like you're saying, Stephen, is that it's not my worth. And I still deserve dignity because I'm a human being. But this is something that Joel and I have been talking about, just on this level of how hard it is going to be for us to not have our worth tied into our work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had to not see it as performative.
Yeah.
I think that it's one of those areas where, in terms of the question of how do we do stuff together, that is part of how the question has been answered in the States, right? Is that part of how you have worth is by performing.
Yes.
And that is probably a maladaptive cultural trait that we have. Like, that's actually bad for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of great stuff about American culture, but that particular piece is pretty destructive.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every international worker that I've known, it's part of their experience to bump up against this idea of, but I can't do things. And that's where I find my value. And now I'm scared that I'm going to get sent home because it's taking me longer to get the language that I think I should, or to catch on. Are they going to tell me one and done?
Yeah. That's what we're expecting, because that's all what we've always known. And it's been so, so good and refreshing, and like knowing that we have people that are for us and not waiting for us to make a misstep. And so that has been, we felt so loved from everybody involved, just because it's not one and done. Like, if I mess up, that's okay.
Yeah.
We expect it.
Yeah. It's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, we are looking for you to mess up, because that's normal, and then we can walk through it together. Right?
Like,
we're looking for you to like fail so that we can navigate that together because that's what happens. Yeah,
for sure.
I think that's one of the things I love with the Envisions Be Become Do, right? This idea that, like, let's focus on who we are first and who does God say we are. And if we start there, then it changes the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one more question, just as we wrap things up. Joel and Kate, how real does the idea of culture shock seem to you? And do you think it's likely that you'll experience culture shock?
Yes, and 100%. Yes. I've only lived here in Nebraska. And so I would be silly to think that it won't happen. And I feel super grateful that we have a team there that also knows that I'm going to be going through it, but I don't know what I don't know. And I felt really peaceful about that recently. And then other times it's just like terrifying that it's going to be so different, but I feel confident that I'm not going to just be placed there and everyone else is like wipe, like dusting off their hands and like, good luck. And so, this is what I know and I'm good at it here. And so I'm going to relearn it and be good at it there in 2 to 5 years, maybe.
or you'll find new things that you're good at.
Correct.
Or I feel like my experience is I've just become really comfortable with like failing constantly.
You know, if I can get there, that'll be a gift from God. I like the first time anybody gives me constructive feedback, I will cry and it's fine. Just look the other way.
I think that almost every exchange I come away from, like every cross-cultural exchange, I'm like, oh, I could have done this differently. I could have done that differently. Oh, I meant to use these words. Oh, that word was completely wrong. Like, it's interesting how I feel like in some ways this life that we move into, like you move from being competent to just living in sort of this perpetual state of failure and also finding that remarkably things seem to get done through you and in you and in spite of you sometimes.
My nightmare.
What about you, Joel? Does the idea of culture shock feel real to you? And do you think it's likely that you'll experience culture shock?
Oh, yeah, 100%. We're moving from one culture to another, very different places. We're going to experience that. And I do feel like we're going to experience it, but we're being prepared for it and we'll be looking out for it, but just like aware that this is going to happen and that this is going to be, even if we don't know how, it's going to be difficult. You know, there's going to be strain and tension and that's just us growing and learning about our new home. I've been there for 2 visits. Kate's been there for one. And I mean, you can see it already. Again, just going back to that, just wanting cookies that I like, you know, and how disappointing that experience was repeatedly. And just, you could feel that if that was like, we were on a trip, right? What if that kept happening and there was no going back to Omaha, Nebraska, where I understand the packaging, that such a simple thing, you can see how that could feel just defeating, or you know, how it's just a sign that nothing is going right and that this was wrong, you know, in some way. It's like, yeah, so being, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I think being ready to experience it is going to be probably the best way to have culture shock just land on our shoulders.
And did you notice that culturally, Joel and I both took a negative and then put it into a positive at the end so we didn't sound negative?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is going to be hard, but guess what? We're really, like, it's going to be great. And no one needs to think that we're saying anything negative because I don't want to offend anybody.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about that particular rhetorical advice is you're taking the weight off of us, right? So that we don't have to feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't have to feel bad now because I know it's happening and you're doing a great job. I might be suffering, but I don't want you to.
But also, like, we don't need to worry about whether, like, you're good enough or whatever because you got it all under control.
Yeah.
I can handle this.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think the tools you've given me
And if it ends up being terrible, then it's actually my fault. So
yeah.
You know, if the book had been better. I think one of the hardest things about culture shock is because, like we were talking about before, there's just this trickle of disorientation. And so there's usually not a point where you're like, oh, today is when culture shock started, right? Because it's like the dial is slowly getting turned up. And it means that like you just have this increasing discomfort over time. And that's where it can be really, really hard to recognize, oh, it's culture shock. And that's where like sometimes we'll sit down with people and literally read through some of the symptoms of culture shock and be like, you know, do these connect? And often the person who, you know, half hour before said, no, I'm not experiencing culture shock, is suddenly like, oh, this is it. But I'm glad to hear that you're at least anticipating that it will happen, because then that, like, if we had a conversation like that at some point, then it would be like, oh yeah, right. Of course. That's what we were expecting would happen.
Hey, thank you guys so much. I mean, this has been a great conversation. Stephen, thank you for taking time, and thanks for your book. It is a great tool. We're finding it super helpful as we walk through it. Thank you for joining us today on Tracks Cultures. If you enjoyed our conversation and want to dive deeper, we invite you to join our community on Discord. It's a space for sharing experiences, asking questions, and connecting with others who are navigating similar journeys. See the link in our show notes to become part of our growing community. Your support means the world to us. And if you'd like to help us continue our work as a creative community looking for the meeting place of faith, art, and culture, consider becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/envisionberlin to find out how you can contribute. Until next time, keep embracing change and embodying transformative hope for humanity.